In the new Woody Allen film, Crimes and Misdemeanors, Jerry Orbach plays the hoodlum brother of the ophthalmologist played by Martin Landau. Orbach co-starred in the film Prince of the City and played Jennifer Grey's father in Dirty Dancing. For many years, he was best known for his roles in musicals on and off Broadway. I asked him first about Crimes and Misdemeanors. I told him I thought it was physically convincing to have him cast as Martin Landau's brother.
Well, I had never worked with Marty Landau before, but we both have similar backgrounds, and for some reason we really took to each other right away, and I guess we came off looking like brothers.
Did you think that you looked like brothers?
Yeah, sort of. I don't know what his specific background is, but I guess it's something close to mine.
Do you know if that came into play in the casting at all?
Actually, you know, Woody does a lot of reworking and reshooting. There was another actor who did those scenes originally, a fellow named Stephen Hill, who's a very good actor. And Woody looked at it, and I guess the relationship just didn't work between Mr. Hill and Mr. Landau, so he recast it with me.
How did he choose you, do you know? Did he audition you, or did he just call you up?
No, they just called and said, would you like to do this? I guess he'd seen me in other things.
Now, you're the brother without a conscience.
Right.
Did you feel you had to physically embody that? Do you know what I mean? That you really had to somehow physically and emotionally through your lines make the point that you were the brother without the conscience.
Oh, yes. This is the realist, the pragmatist, the one who lives in the real world, the one who's been involved with the garment business and restaurants in Atlantic City and knows people from all stratas of life. So there's a different kind of physicality about a guy like that than there is about a sort of self doubt, anguishing ophthalmologist.
But did you have any people in your life to model this character on?
Oh, yes. A lot of people that I've known over the years. Guys from the garment business, even guys from the arts, from the movie business. And it's not really a conglomeration or a compilation of different people. It's my observations that sort of sink into me. So it's a facet of me, you know. It's not really me, but it's somebody that I could be for a minute.
Now, the people who you're referring to in the garment business and in show business weren't actually killers, weren't people who knew people who can hire someone to do a hit.
Probably not, but I would guess that anybody involved in certain businesses like the garment business, trucking business, restaurant business, run into mob people and know them and know what they're capable of.
Woody Allen works with so much secrecy around the set. No one is allowed to know what the story is until the movie comes out. Does that put any strain on the actors?
Well, it can, I think. I only got my scenes. I never saw the whole script. But it didn't really matter that much to me. I understood at least my part of the story. So that didn't bother me. But it is kind of bordering on paranoia, but that's the way he works. You know, it's very secretive, and that's the way he wants it.
You co-starred in the film Prince of the City. I really consider that movie to be your movie. You play a corrupt cop who won't cooperate with a commission investigating members of a narcotic squad on the take.
Right.
Let me play a scene from it.
You indict me on a squawk of a dope dealer who tried to buy me out of a bust? You want to break up another federal operation that'll put away more quality mob guys in a year than you'll touch in your whole pissant career?
Detective Levy, you're hardly in a position...
I'll tell you what I'm in a position to do, and that's throw you out the window. It's only the fifth floor, but I'll try to aim you so you land on your pointed little head.
Levy, you can easily avoid trial. All you have to do is cooperate.
You got your mind made up to try me? Go ahead and try me. But not for a lousy $400. At least get me for assault.
Now, in this scene where you've just overturned the investigator's desk and then hit him real hard, it's very menacing.
Yes.
In that scene. Did you feel well-suited to that kind of menacing performance?
Oh, I love it, because, you know, in real life, you can't go around throwing people's desks over and hitting them or kneeing them in the groin. You'll get sued. So to play that kind of a scene is a wonderful release for anybody. Because we have so many frustrations. There are people we'd like to hit, but we can't really do that. Also, it was a great release for the audience, because in Prince of the City, The prosecutors are very dry and very nasty, and, you know, they just don't give an inch to anybody. And it was sort of, the audience got its revenge on those guys for a minute there when I did that. It was a release for the audience.
There are a lot of expletives in your lines in Prince of the City, and I was wondering whether they were all said as written or whether you had the chance to kind of add them where they felt right.
No, they were pretty much written in stone. There was a very well-crafted script, and there wasn't much room for ad-libbing.
You actually got your start in musicals. As a matter of fact, why don't I play something here from 42nd Street?
I'm sorry, show business isn't for me. I'm going back to Allentown.
What was that word you just said? Allentown? I'm offering you a chance to star in the biggest musical Broadway scene in 20 years, and you say Allentown? Come on along and listen to the lullaby of Broadway. The hip hooray and ballyhoo. The lullaby of Broadway. The rumble of the subway train. The rattle of the taxis. The daffodils who entertain at Angelo's and Maxie's. When a Broadway baby.
And I've read about you that your heroes when you were getting started were James Dean, Marlon Brando, Montgomery Clift. They didn't do musicals with the exception of Brando's Guys and Dolls. Was it your ambition to do musicals when you were starting out?
It's funny. I always sang and loved singing, and I studied it. I came to New York after I got out of Northwestern. I was a very serious young actor. Did study with Lee Strasberg, Herbert Berghoff, Mira Rostova, worked at the Actors Studio. But the first job I got in New York was to replace the street singer in Threepenny Opera. And I actually then replaced McKeith, Mac the Knife, for about 6 months, worked with Lenya and everything. And I went from 3 years, 3.5 years in the Threepenny Opera to originate El Gallo in The Fantastics, which gave me a springboard to Broadway in a show called Carnival. And I just kept going from one show to another, from one musical to another, and it was a terrific life. My kids were being born, and I was raising a family in New York. And all my friends who couldn't sing, who were desperate and out of work, couldn't get a job off Broadway or anything, all went to Hollywood. And some of them became big stars out there. And that's sort of what I had wanted to do, you know, in the background. I'd always wanted to do that, work in film. And it just didn't seem to work out that way. I kept working, and it was all right.
So do you feel that Broadway might have actually slowed down your film career?
Oh, sure, but it was a good life. It still is. And I love jumping back from one thing to another.
It's interesting to me that you got your start in Threepenny Opera. It seems like the perfect place for you, since it was a musical, but it was also a menacing musical. So,
yes, well, I had done the first American production of the Caucasian Chalk Circle at Northwestern, and I was very, very steeped in Brecht and pretty knowledgeable about Brecht's work and everything. So when I went to meet the director of Threepenny, we chatted for a little while, and he gave me the job right away.
What kinds of roles did you think you were heading for when you were getting started? What did you think that your specialty was going to be?
I really didn't know I'd have any kind of a specialty. I thought I'd be a leading man, you know, and I was never a juvenile, even when I was 19 or 20. I mean, at 20, I was playing Mac the Knife opposite Lenya, which was outrageous. You know, I had no business being there, but I never looked like a kid. So it took me till I was into my mid-20s to start to really get the roles that I looked like. You know, I should have been 30, 35 playing them.
Did that seem like a hardship at the time, that you didn't look like a kid when you were a kid?
I don't know, not really. But sometimes I'd think, you know, the sort of Tab Hunter, Tony Curtis types, you know, I said, well, I can never compete with them, you know, back in the late 50s, because I was a little offbeat.
But of course, then their careers sometimes end early because...
Yes, I found that out.
Yeah.
Longevity is in being a character, man. Somebody said, are you ever going to retire? I said, no, I want to be like Melvin Douglas playing the grandpa on my deathbed when I'm about 85. That would be a pleasure.
Do you know what's next for you?
No, I don't. I never really do. I've got a bunch of movies that are in the can. I did one on the last exit to Brooklyn.
Oh.
I have an interesting picture called Upworld, which has a little creature in it that I hope is going to be like an E.T. thing. Everybody's very high on it. And a couple of other things. And I just had the absolute thrill of working with Mike Nichols on a picture called Postcards from the Edge, Carrie Fisher's story, where I play Meryl Streep's father. And that was a kick.
Thanks.
Okay.
A lot for doing the interview.
It's a pleasure.